Welcome to the Umbrella Hour. Your hosts are Dr. Ahn, clinical sexologist, and Xander Kagg, licensed clinical social worker. I'm going to hand this over to you, Xander, to introduce our guests.
Thank you, Ahn. Our guests today are the guys from Four Trans Guys, which is a podcast, and we're going to be talking more about that. We have JJ Dollarhide and Megan Rohr with us. Just for a little bit of background on Four Trans Guys, it is a candid, compassionate, and deeply grounded podcast that explores trans wisdom, wellness, resilience, and community across generations, which is a really cool feature, I think. And little disclaimer, the hosts of Four Trans Guys are not just Megan and JJ, but me, Xander. I'm also one of the hosts. And so we're all about just creating a space for honest conversations about identity and healing, masculinity, spirituality, relationships, aging, joy, and survival. Or as we talked about in the last couple of our episodes, thriving, right? Not just surviving. Welcome to the show, JJ and Megan.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
I'd love to hear where this idea came from to start a podcast specifically for trans guys, and where did it come from?
Well, if you want the way back deep origin story, it happened because a girl I was dating once went to seminary and was Xander's roommate. And so I met Xander, and the conversation has continued. Maybe three or four breaths have taken place in the stream of consciousness talking that has been our lives. Xander will probably tell you, I had to point out to Xander that he may like his wife and should ask her on a date. Xander has pointed out things in my life like, hey, don't you think maybe this is the journey that you're on? And so we are people who notice things in each other's lives. 15 years ago, we worked on a book together because we were young trans guys. We weren't young in chronological age, but young in the journey. And we had collected all of these mentors and people who had so many amazing stories. And we were living in a time when if you Googled trans stuff, the only thing you would find is pornography or pictures of surgeries that had not yet healed. And a bunch of very new trans guys doing diaries and hadn't necessarily figured out what it's about. And so we wanted to spread the wisdom of elders and those who could share what they had learned on their journey, because I don't know about anyone here, but my journey changes pretty much every couple of years. And I look back and I'm like, holy cow, did I think that 5 years ago? So the Letters for My Brother's stories were trans guys writing letters to themselves pre-transition, all the stuff they wished that they knew. And in the process of working on that book, we came up with this idea of there being transitional wisdom, something that you can pass on, that you can learn and tell other people about. And we've been collecting it for 15 years. We came to another point in the world where it seemed if you Google trans guys, you get pornography and very young people's diaries. And maybe you can see healed scar pictures now, but there's not a lot of depth and wisdom unless you know who to search for and what types of people are able to share their stories. And so we thought podcasting is a beautiful medium for people to hear stories in a new way and really get to dip into some of the diversity in the community. And it just grew out of that. JJ came into this journey slightly differently via maybe Hollywood as a child and sharing stories for others. But I'll let JJ share your tiptoe into this area the way you'd like to.
Yeah, so I'm originally from San Francisco and moved to Los Angeles in my early teens to move in with the film business. And I got really good at being a very girly girl, went through my 20s and 30s, worked in banking, and then ended up later in Texas and started to really question myself in Texas. I couldn't do it in San Francisco, couldn't do it in Los Angeles. No. Had to be in Texas, where if you Googled in Texas, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, is if you Google in Texas like transitioning, a lot of the information is very limited. And if I would go to a doctor and say, hey, I wanted help with transitioning, I want to feel more masculine, they would not give me actual gender affirming care. So I had to do it the hard way, as I usually do a lot of things. And that's why wisdom is always so important in my life. And I love the wisdom of elders. peers. I love the wisdom of people who have gone through it before. I did a lot of work in peer support, and I found myself in a chaplaincy space during COVID and found an opportunity. I've always wanted to go back to San Francisco. I've always wanted to move back ever since I left. And I found an opportunity with a job to go back to San Francisco. And as part of that, I started to better connect with folks that are in San Francisco that are trans, are queer, right? You basically see everyone on the bus in different ways is in some part of the LGBT community or an ally of, for the most part. And I really started to find community and connected up with Megan. As trans people start to find each other in different circles, ended up working in similar jobs, and we started to have a conversation. And as we got to know each other, we started taking these road trips. And one of the road trips we did was up to Portland to meet up with Xander for the first time, which was just such a gift. I was giddy about that, and we had lunch. We started talking about what could we be doing together? How could we make cool things happen? Particularly you two have already been working on Letters from My Brothers, and I've been helping with some of the Will Go Forward is brand, like books and stuff that Megan's been writing, and wanted to try and build on what we already had. And it's kind of cool, the three of us, because we come from different lenses and we have different ways of being in the world. And when we interview other folks, we're able to look through what resonates with us and have just really beautiful conversations that feel like we're just four trans guys talking around at the kitchen table, chatting about life and what it means to us. And I think that wisdom is just really profound. So I'm so grateful to Megan and Xander for being able to connect with this space.
Absolutely. And we are now four trans guys, right? So there's the four of us. And
there is Dr. On.
Right. And so what some of the overlap between our two podcasts is that we're focused on well-being. So you use the word wellness. We're hosted by the UK Health Radio Network, and we take health to mean in a very broad way, from mental and physical and emotional and spiritual and social and sexual and financial, all the different ways and the wisdom that comes from it. So it's just an interesting overlap. It's different formats, but we're doing similar things. And so today we're doing this crossover episode that's going to be broadcast on the UK Health Radio Network and on the For Trans Guy platform. So I was thinking maybe it could be a little bit of fun to ask on some of the questions that we ask on For Trans Guys when we have a guest on. What do you think about that, On?
I'm good with that. Yeah.
All right. So I usually start off by asking the guest the first question, which is, tell us who you are and what brings you to the table. So it's as open as that. Who are you and what brings you to the table today? Because it's like we're all sitting around a table chatting.
Yeah, I am actually sitting at a table, my desk. Yeah, I'm On, and I live in St. Augustine, Florida. I've lived here a very long time. It's the longest time I have ever lived anywhere. I moved here with my late husband in 2004, and that was in Jacksonville. In 2009, he passed away. He had an aortic dissection. His first one was in 2006. So he didn't quite make the three-year mark. He almost did, but not quite. And then I needed a different environment, and I ended up moving to St. Augustine. I used to come out here because I'm very drawn to water. I love the water. And I would feel very grounded when I would come out here. So that steered me in this direction, and I started looking for a house. I have a friend in Thailand, and he was mortified that I moved to St. Augustine. And he said to me, you know, they had the KKK headquarters there. And I said, what the hell is wrong with you? Why would you tell me this now when I've been talking about looking for a house? What's wrong with this picture? He's a Jewish guy, and he has a very catchy laugh. So he was able to chuckle, and we moved forward from that moment. But I didn't start off identifying as a trans guy. I know that that's been many people's story. I was like you, JJ. I went through a period where, for me, I did everything to not so much prove. That wasn't it. It was trying to get comfortable as a female. And I could do it, but there was always this nagging thought that something was missing. And it would be little innuendos that people would say, just innocently. There was no meanness behind it. And it would be years earlier, somebody would remark that I was handsome. And so I had done everything possible to be as girly as possible without getting too caught up in color schemes and all that. And I remember when I said to my mom, I keep hearing that I'm handsome. And it wasn't for any validation purposes. It was just something that I wouldn't say bothered me, but it was on my mind. And she was very matter of fact. And she said, well, you are. Now, that doesn't mean a whole lot. There are a lot of different presentations. But then as time went on, the more I was fighting job placements, as I call it. My late husband, who was an incredible guy, he was an entrepreneur and he had a real vision. And we had met because I was in the hospice industry. And we used to call him the godfather of hospice. He started one of the, after they did the pilot study in Connecticut and other areas of the country, but he started the first hospice in Florida. So anyway, but he would do this thing. He would say, you know, why don't you go over there and hang out with the doctor's wives? But I really wanted to just be able to hang out with the guys. And he was pushing me into this job description, for lack of better words. And I didn't want that. I wanted to be able to navigate my terrain where I felt at home and at ease. And I think that was predominantly me my whole life. My mother always said, if somebody told you not to jump off the cliff, you would jump off the cliff. But I think it was because I wasn't really into trying to get approval from the world. And so sometimes that backfired on me. I met Xander. Now, we have a different take on this. So I haven't talked to this person in a long time. She used to date my son many moons ago. He lives in California. And I was out there filming interviews and all that. And she helped me a number of times. She would come with me. And we were at the LGBT Center in Castro. And Willie had invited me because he was doing a reading. Now, Xander says he doesn't remember meeting me. I thought I met him. So I have to contact Stacy now.
We probably did meet because Willie was reading from his chapter in the Manning Up book, which I was the editor of. So we probably did meet, but I have the worst memory. If I meet somebody once and I don't see them again for a long time, I don't remember it. But then when we met again in Jacksonville, Florida, and then we saw each other off and on over a period of time, then you're in my memory bank. I was busy running around making sure that everything was happening. So I was just not paying attention. So
no, I'm going to say, Xander, that you are perfectly primed for being a really good social worker or a faith leader. And you just hold confidentiality to a very high standard. But honestly, I think also those same years that Manning Up came out, it was a time in our world where it wasn't always clear who at an event was being open about different identities that they carried and who wasn't. And you never know who's coming because they're an ally or learning about something and who 10 years later is going to be joining the community. I think it's really helpful that you didn't remember every single person that introduced themselves to you. And I was really resonating with the way you told your story of maybe what a lot of our podcast guests talk about is their awakening awareness over time. Because for me in my journey, I grew up in the 80s when all the after school specials told me I was gonna not like my body, like your thighs or whatever, and maybe you weren't gonna like wearing a dress. But there were a number of magazines I could purchase that were expensive that would either tell me how to change my body so I could have the perfect butt or whatever it was society thought I should want, or to try to figure out how to get over it. Like, are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. She both tried to make her breasts grow faster in puberty and get over the fact that she wanted these things when she was different than other people. And so I feel like I grew up in a time where it was common practice to socialize female-bodied people to assume they weren't going to feel uncomfortable in their body. And that makes it really a different way of coming to awareness for a lot of trans men, because we're like, but that's how everyone in this kind of body feels. And our job is to develop our self-esteem and not have predators do tough things to us. That's the work we're supposed to be doing. And so I think it's really common for folk to come into that awareness a little bit later in life, whereas it's a very different way that it sounds like people who were raised male by their parents were very domineering about some of those gender roles. I grew up in South Dakota where the gender roles were very strict. I was on the debate team where you'd actually lose the entire debate if you were female-bodied and you weren't wearing a dress. But playing in the orchestra, I played the harp and the cello were the only instruments where you could wear pants because the instrument goes between your legs. And so I got to wear a pants and a tie all through middle school and high school because I played a feminine instrument. So I got to do a lot of playing between the lines. I've always had large feet. I have size 13 and a half feet in women's sizes. So I couldn't wear women's shoes if I wanted to in the 80s. And so trying to mix and match, it always felt unsafe or strange if I was in the middle space of in-between land, and that there was safety if I would pick a lane, either more feminine or more masculine. And I don't ascribe to that. I live in San Francisco. I don't live in a space where you have to choose one or the other. Some of the best people in San Francisco morally are like Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, who are raising millions of dollars for others, but also doing drag with full beards. I don't believe that that's like a thing everyone needs to lean into, but as a parent of Black children, as a person who's in my life been out enough as a trans leader that I've had to wear bulletproof vests sometimes, there is a way on testosterone, if I have a beard, I can disappear every once in a while. My name's still Megan. So even going to other countries, people are going to laugh at me when they look at my passport, thinking my parents named me in a way that was wrong. But still, they believe I'm a male, and that's why it's funny. They're not laughing at me because I'm trans. And so there is a way in which sometimes our like decisions about how butch or how masculine or how handsome to be, what puts us in risk and what puts us in safety. And I think that changes based on where you live in the world and who's the leaders in charge and who's running the law enforcement at the time. And so there's so many different factors as people are figuring it out that I've just come to a place where I'm just delighted when people find a bit of happiness. So if the water makes you happy, there's enough yucky stuff in this world, good enough for me, right? If my hair in the back doesn't stick up each morning because I got the haircut just right, good enough for me today, right? And so I think the more we can hold on to the bits of our lives that are refreshing us, the easier it is to explore who we are without going too far into the hard.
Something just resonated with me when you were telling your story, Megan. I always blow everybody away when I tell them that I actually had breast implants. I should have taken my cue from God, seriously. I would have been just fine. I would have never had to have surgery. So I have Inga and Olga. I don't want Inga and Olga. That was one of my regrets, which was hindsight. So now I'm a proponent that when young people who go in for body modification, I'm not saying don't do it. It's none of my business, whatever makes you happy. But there should be a conversation. I don't know if you and I have talked about this, Xander, if we ever did.
I don't know. I don't think I've heard about Inga and Olga before, which I love.
JJ has a similar story, not only choosing German names, but I'll let you tell your own story, JJ.
I had polycystic ovarian syndrome and I had hair choice. So I had a beard. It wasn't prophetic as it is displayed today, which you all can't see, but I had a significant beard that I would maintain and have to manage. And I wish at that time a doctor would have been clear. It isn't that you're not female enough. Have you ever considered that you might be male, that you might be trans? And doctors would say, gosh, your testosterone is just so high. Just can't believe it. Well, wouldn't that have been a clue? Huh? If your testosterone is naturally high and that's how your body is producing, it's not that you're a terrible woman. You're maybe a man and you haven't considered that. And I just wish that what was a part of the conversation. I fought myself way too long, I think. And it led to a lot of misunderstandings about life, about myself, about what we're meant to do in the world. And I think in my late teens, early 20s, if somebody would have had, when I was an adult, somebody would have had a really frank conversation and just given me some options, I would have maybe moved more with curiosity and explored a lot more about myself earlier than run and hide and fight all the time. So I appreciate that. I also have a funny story about picking names. And so is Inga and
Olga.
Inga and Olga. So these were chosen names that you chose for your friends, correct? Great. Okay, good. My mom is originally from Germany. And so I'm a first generation immigrant here. And so I have the right to now get a European Union passport from Germany. And it's really funny because the Germans have changed the law in a way that said, we accept all gendered variants. You can change your gender. That's no problem. So I said, great. My name is JJ and I'm male. Let's see my passport now. And they came back to me and they're like, JJ isn't a name. JJ's not a name? What do you mean, JJ? JJ's not a name. It's just two letters. It's very simple. No, JJ's not a name because it's not masculine or feminine. You must choose a masculine or feminine name. I don't want to pick a name. I want to be JJ because that's my name.
We will be taking our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. Our guests this hour are the Four Trans Guys from the Four Trans Guys podcast. We're actually doing an overlap. How much fun is that? The Four Trans Guys podcast is a candid, compassionate, and deeply grounded podcast that explores trans wisdom, wellness, resilience, and community across generations. Let's take our commercial break. We will be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. And our guests are from the Four Trans Guys podcast. Let's get back to the show.
So I got a little ticked off at the moment. Megan remembers as well. German has four different dotted words, umlauts, and an S-tet. And so I took all of the different umlauts you could possibly shove into a name, every single one of them, and an S-tet, and became Jürgen Jasper. So now I know that I'm still held up with this. And now I've been told recently by another Jürgen who happens to be German that they don't like middle names. So now I think I have to go and simplify, right? Like, it was idiotic, right? Everybody's open, we change your genders, but not culturally, we have this masculine and feminine way of being in the world. And if you don't fit into that box, even down to your name, you can't belong. And I just find that fabulous and fascinating and overwhelming all at the same time.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So one of the things that I've done, I think, is focused on being healing in my ways of being in the world, right? Choosing JJ was a healing way of accepting myself. And when I was a kid, my dad would call me JJ. And so I owned that name from him. And I think there's other things like trying to figure out a clever name of the Jürgen Jasper and trying to own that. And so it makes me wonder, what are some of the ways that we choose to survive in this world? You chose your beloved names on your chest to be gone and no more. What are some other ways that maybe you have chosen to survive or heal yourself in this world?
Well, I never had surgery. I want to have surgery. I would like to get rid of Inga and Olga. Yes. I think for me, I miss having connection with guys. I live in an area where I'm not really connected. I hang out. I refer to my garden as my temple. That's where I regenerate. It's where I power up my batteries. And I'm not very religious, but I'm spiritual. So I have a lot of connection with just God's earth, the plants, the birds, my dogs, neighboring cats. But I'm enjoying this very moment. And I miss having moments like this. I don't want to say that it's not possible here. I haven't had much of that. I have a few people who I can connect with. They'll shout out at me and say, hey, you know, how's it going? And I'll shout back and say, oh, everything's fine. I'm doing this, that, or the other. And there are those connections. But in general, I've talked about forever that I wanted to return to the Bay Area. I know the area, there's been a lot of changes, but I deeply miss it. Or even Sacramento. I could even plow down in Sacramento. It's not that I'm unhappy here. I'm not unhappy here. I have sunshine practically every day. But it's not free and open the way it is in your part of the world. And I know there are issues out there too. Don't get me wrong. There are. But yeah, it's very different in this part of the world. I moved here January 9th, 2014. So I've been here a while. Yeah. And my neighbors, they've come and gone. Many of them who are still here. It's always friendly. Nobody really gives me a hard time. It's moving away from this area, and I start to hedge out in other areas that sometimes I shave, sometimes I don't. So it's weird to me.
I appreciate that. And I think that's something with the four trans guys that we've been playing around with and trying to find the right time, because there's several folks who said, I really want to find community and I miss just chatting with the guys and it's hard to get out of the house and there's nothing around where I'm at and all of that. And while, you know, Zoom isn't the most ideal place to have a conversation, you know, COVID taught us a lot about using Zoom, and sometimes it brings you something of value. And that's something that we've been trying to find the right time and place to create an extension of the podcast itself into like a community room where we can just chat, talk about the topic without it being recorded and, you know, make connections like that. In your world, have you found opportunities like that along your life where you've been in a kind of connection with other people? You mentioned, you know, not wanting to be with the doctor's wives and, you know, wanting to be with the guys. Have there been other times where you've found real connections, ways of surviving with others?
Yeah, I mean, it's momentarily. So I really enjoyed visiting Xander in Orlando and wished I had done it more often. Now, I don't know how he felt about that, but I loved
having you over, of course.
It was great. I got a tour and everything. It was fabulous. And I got to see Margaret, too. She's very sweet. I'm a bit of a, I don't want to say a loner. I'm not a loner. I like hanging out with my dogs. I'm more of an animal person than I am a people person. But when I am with people, I'm genuinely interested in people. I will engage. I have an interest in the human being, which is why I think after my late husband passed away, I delved into going out and filming interviews. That really, I think, it spared me. It helped me process and get through life. But yeah, I mean, I have had moments like that. I found that I didn't do so well navigating some of the LGBT groups because there was so much fighting. And I didn't like that. I know people have their trauma. Believe me, I do. And I get it. But if I were to hang with people, I want to be around healthy people. That's very important to me. So being able to visit Xander was nice. I wish we had lived somewhat closer. I probably would have been knocking on his door more often, hanging out with him, and vice versa. I don't think it would be honest for me to say that I don't miss connection. I do, but it has to be healthy. You seem very playful, Megan, and that's really nice. I can have a very odd sense of humor. So when I get down in the dumps, I have to poke fun. And that's how I survive, and I get on the other side of that. But I'm also an intellectual. So sometimes when I get really bored here, I'll say, I need to join an intellectual group. I'm really fed up with not having some meat in the conversation. And that doesn't mean I can't have fun.
Well, that's totally my vibe. Is people get very confused because I do so many very seemingly different things. And so, like, I'm cultivating joy on purpose because some of my work life is very heavy. I've done 20 years of working with the homeless. I did behavioral health support as a chaplain for first responders during COVID and responding to mass casualty disasters, trying to help protests larger than 30,000 stay nonviolent, like just very heavy stuff. And in spaces where not everybody was grateful, that you were there. And so you get the layers of trauma that come from being a part of the LGBTQ community, and then the layers of trauma from work life. And then there are days when my trauma is having a trauma and I can't figure out what it is. And I'm lucky because I have two very beautiful children who are playful and like doing adventures. But there are some days where talking it through, there's not really peers that have worn all those same types of hats. Mm-hmm. And so it can feel hard, or I don't want my crud to become someone else's crud. The way I say it is, trauma is like boogers. It likes to stick together and make a bigger booger. And so I want to be able to get it out, but not in a way that's going to harm someone else or be a mess I have to clean up next. Mm-hmm. And so I do a lot of art. I do a lot of poetry. I do a lot of writing. I do a lot of, tomorrow JJ and I are going to go do tile mosaics to fill potholes in one of the dirtiest neighborhoods of San Francisco.
Yeah.
And it's just because I personally need to feel like there are some parts of my life that are fixable. And so I pick tiny little fix-it tasks that can be completed in the amount of time that I have. Mm-hmm. And then there's other moments of my life where I'm like, I am so tired of people mm-hmm. and the ways that they're cruel to each other. I've given everything in the way that I'm deeply listening to people. And it's especially if it's a time where people are translating kindness into malice, that mm-hmm. I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to go study history. And I'm going to go collect photographs, and I'm going to use the stories of the past to talk about what I'm doing, because maybe people can hold on to that kind of storytelling in this moment. And then there's other days, I don't know about y'all, but I just kind of get sick of myself every once in a while. And so there are days when I'm like, I just want to be the person who sets up the chairs and brings the donuts. And then someone else is going to tell their story, and they're going to be the center of the universe for a second. And it's usually when I cycle through doing all of those different things and don't ever shame myself for needing any one of those, that I'm a healthier person. And to everyone else, it looks like busyness, like too busy. And to me, it's about getting out the yuck and making sure that if I'm putting something in my psyche that's extra, that it's going to be wellness related. Because I'm like you, I haven't found a stable collection of people. If there was a book club that, ooh, that was the best people ever and the books worked, I would stop doing all of that stuff. It would fill all of those needs. But in the absence of whatever that society was that Gertrude Stein had when she could hang out in Paris with all the women who wore pants, I haven't found that community in that way. And so I pop into different communities and I try to find ways to be well, even if the world doesn't have a fountain of wellness that's got my name on it.
So it's nice that the three of you do what you do. I wonder how many lives you've touched because of that. You won't know for years to come, you know.
The problem is a lot of people tell me, and it's like the one person who's pissed that is the one that sticks like gum in a kid's hair, right? And so I'm trying to not do that. Xander is better at that. I think quitting large parts of social media helps, but I'm working on it.
Well, it's just the way our brains work, right? Our brains track negatives like 4 or 5 to 1 with positives. And it's for a good reason. It's to keep us safe and to keep us alive. It's just that we're not being chased by saber-toothed tigers, or we're not feuding with the village next door that's throwing spears at us. We're having stress or threat responses to things we see or hear. They might not even be happening to us directly. And so, but that's just what our brain does. Our brain holds on to that stuff. I learned at a really young age. I think it does make sense that one of the things that's really helpful for that is meditation, because meditation teaches us how to be calm. And so when we find ourselves not being calm, or if we're stressed about something, we remember, oh, I know how to switch on that parasympathetic nervous system that will calm me. Slow my heart rate, slow my breathing, release the muscle tension. But we have the thing that always gets in my way, memory gets in my way in a lot of parts of my life. And this is one of those parts, which is remembering to remember that I know what to do. Because when I'm in, like anybody else, when my brain is on pay attention mode, the last thing I'm thinking is, how do I calm down? So I have to remind myself, but I do it much more quickly now than I used to. And so that helps. I mean, also, I think my temperament, I just don't give an F most of the time. And I think that's just because I was bullied a lot as a kid. And then I learned why some people bully. And that's because maybe they're being bullied. And then I developed compassion for bullies. And then I was like, well, I'm not going to take it so seriously. You know what I mean? Because it's not me, it's them. You know, and we've talked on our podcast on about with some guests about the internal versus external locus of control. And I used to be very externally driven in my teens and in my 20s and in my 30s about when I started to sort of switch a little bit more towards the internal locus of control. And I think I'm much more there now. It's not 100%. It never will be. That wouldn't make sense as a human, I guess, but that's helpful, you know, and it's one of those things. How do we teach people how to have an internal locus of control? I mean, I know how to do it. I can teach people that, but it's not something that we're getting in school. It's not something we're typically getting from our parents or whoever's raising us, at least not directly. We get it indirectly because we see adults in our world when we're young modulating their emotional response to things. I didn't grow up with those kinds of adults. I don't know about you. So if we don't see it, if we don't see something's happened, but the adults around us are like, it's okay, we'll do this, everything will work out. I just saw freaking out, right? So then we become people who freak out over things. It's like an uphill battle to retrain our minds to behave differently. It's not an easy thing to do.
I think, too, we can get into, and there's been a lot studied on the survival adaptive state. That's our go-to when we're in trouble, whatever that is. We're maybe fatigued or maybe we had a bad experience, and then that's our first go-to. We don't always have control over that, but it's so important to know that we can get control. I think that's very important. Childhood role models. My mom was a very sweet, kind person. I think I'm more of my father. My father was hyperactive. And what spared me was running. I ran for years, and that calmed me down. Calmed me down as in I could think, I felt grounded. And they talk about the runner's high. It was feeling grounded. I don't run anymore. I like to walk now. Every now and then I'll run, but I'm very similar, I think, to all of us sitting here because creativity is what spares us. Can you see this? What does that look like to you?
It looks like the mouth of
a pariah.
Yeah.
Or a heart, maybe. A fish.
Yes. When my brother died, he was always into mountain biking or trail biking, but he also loved being out on the water. And so when he passed away, ironically, I found this and I thought, man, that just reminds me of my brother. So I have that. I do a number of these stones, but then people say to me, oh, you got to throw that away. That's crap. And I'll say, no, I can decorate it. It's like a slingshot. It has a theme of its own, or chopsticks. Painting the chopsticks so I can hold the leaves up on my plants, or painting metal, or storytelling. I tell my grandchildren, well, now they appreciate it. When they were transitioning into their prepubescent states, they would say, you know, I'm not that kid anymore, right? But always being able to tell stories. Xander, your creativity is there. It's helping people figure life out, how to do things differently. That's a creative bend.
We will be taking our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. And our guests this hour are the four trans guys from the Four Trans Guys podcast. The Four Trans Guys podcast is a candid, compassionate, and deeply grounded podcast that explores trans wisdom, wellness, resilience, and community across generations. We're always grateful to our sponsors who support our program and therefore grateful to play their commercials. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this commercial.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach. Here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
We're back from our second commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kegg. Let's get back to our guests.
Yeah, my creativity when I was younger was much more literary. I wrote poetry. I did those doodle art things where you big posters and you color them in. I did them all the time. I was a big fan of doodle art. I did macrame. So I did things that were single, right? Single people, person. I was also into sports. So I did a lot of, played tennis and did track and field and bicycling. But then, you know, I think in my 30s is when I started, my creativity went into something more social, like speaking at events or, yeah, doing a training or telling stories, motivational speaking. So I, because I don't do any of those other, what I would have thought of as more creative things, but I think speaking is a form of creativity. And yeah, with this podcast format, it's been a lot of fun, yeah, right? Because I do the Umbrella Hour with you on, and I do the Four Trans Guys with JJ and Megan. And then I have my own podcast called The Third Space, where I talk to other people about other things, because it's fun to just mix it up. And so I'd get too bored if I just had one, I think.
Well, I was going to say, Xander, I didn't include this in the letters for my brother's podcast trajectory because I was trying to keep it as short as possible, but you had a book of ideas back then, and it was maybe 3 books of ideas. Because remember I said I like to complete projects. That makes me feel satisfied when I'm doing work like with the homeless, and has a lot less likelihood to have moments where you're, oh, I'm done. And so one day I just looked at Xander and I just said, pick one and I'll help you finish it. And the one you picked was the Letters for My Brothers book.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right? Nice.
What's really cool, Megan, is that really started me on a path, because there are many things in my book of ideas now that I have been able to accomplish, because I was just collecting ideas and I was just putting them out into the universe. Maybe somebody else will do it. I don't have to be the person that does it. I just think it's a good idea. And I would share my ideas with others, hoping that somebody else would do it, because I really didn't want to do it. But like the work that I started doing about 6 years ago, where I was on my own consulting, training, that kind of stuff, even the ideas, the things that I do now for work, they're in my idea book, right? It's like ideas that I had 30 years ago or more. So for people who are thinking about, oh, I've got this really great idea, or there's these things I want to do, but I can't do them. Well, you know what? Maybe not right now, right? 30 years ago, I didn't have the experience. I didn't have the credibility. I didn't have the access that I have now. And so now I can do it. I couldn't have done what I do now 30 years ago. I didn't even know how to do it. I thought I did, you know, like I know what to do. I just had an idea. So all of us have had different ideas, and some of them we've put into action, but I bet not all of them. I bet there's a bunch of ideas that we all have that we haven't put into action. And so for the listener, maybe there's some ideas that you have that you'd like to put into action. And maybe what it takes is teaming up with someone else who is compatible, right? Who's complementary to you. Because Megan wanted to put into action one of my ideas. That's it. That's all it took.
I was going to add, and if you don't have an idea, email Xander, and Xander's got 3 books full of them, and maybe could spare one or two.
Yeah. You can have some of my ideas. That's for sure. Although, yeah, I might have to be careful with what I share. You know, my brain's a little wacky sometimes, but I don't toe the line. I think things outside of the box, but it works for me. So we are almost out of time.
Yeah.
And usually what we do on Four Trans Guys is we give the fourth trans guy the stage to say anything they want to say about anything they want to say. It's taking us out with your message, your wisdom, your challenge, your call to action. What would you like to say?
Go easy on yourself. Life is hard enough. None of us were born with a textbook or a flash drive, as youth would say today. We arrive and we're so hard on ourselves, and we have to be kinder to ourselves. We need that message because we don't always have the people around us.
Thank you so much, JJ and Megan, for coming on the Umbrella Hour and for sharing your Four Trans Guys platform with us.
Yes.
Yeah. Amazing.
We've reached the end of the Umbrella Hour. We hope that you enjoyed this hour as much as we did. Until next time, thank you for listening.